This is Contraband Food, episode 2. Woo! How are you doing, Phil?
I'm lovely, thank you.
On this beautiful Friday.
That's it, you know. It's the nights are drawing in now, aren't they?
They are getting darker.
Yeah.
Any big news?
Well, you know, I have a new job.
Yes,
woo!
Exactly. Yeah,
you know.
And you're well. It sounds like a big, you know, you seem quite pleased about it because I remember we were talking about it. I don't know how much of this you want to be in there. You're not identifiable, so that's fine. But I'll probably delete that bit. And because we were talking about it over lockdown about how you didn't send that many applications, but you got the one you wanted.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Which I thought was very impressive.
I finally become president of Russia.
Yeah. Very good. Well, that's quite impressive in itself, because presumably Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I know him personally.
Yeah. Well,
you know.
That would explain everything.
He's the person who we gave my Novichok from.
Yeah. Good. I was wondering what happened to him, to the neighbours and all your other flatmates, actually.
Pardon?
And I was wondering what had happened to all the flatmates. That
yeah, I know, right? They've all disappeared. You'll find my garden's a bit more lumpy now.
But yeah, so the silliness aside, the episode today is on why we're only years away from a total meltdown in our food supply.
Lovely. It sounds quite apocalyptic.
Yeah, it is quite apocalyptic. It was appropriate for these kind of times, I think. I mean, have you looked outside recently? It's like bonkers out there. Like all kinds of stuff is kicking off. Obviously I live slightly further into London than you do, but like. They've totally effed all of the bridges and the roads along where.
Can't we use the word?
Well, I wasn't going to, but
no, it's fine.
Beat it out. So it feels apocalyptic. So I think it's an appropriate episode topic.
Lovely.
So what do I mean? So what I'm talking about is our society, right, relies on this concept of industrialized agriculture, right. Industrialized food and volume, like massive farms producing loads and loads of the same thing. And that's really dangerous.
Why is it dangerous?
There you go. So it's dangerous because the farms, what we're talking about, tend to create what are called monocultures. So
okay.
They're all the same crop, right? So if you think about, we'll go back to the bananas example, even though I know we've discussed this like 5 million times. So you've got the banana we all know and love. It's pretty much identical across the world. There are other types of banana, but like you never see them. Like, do you know what I mean? Like you could go to like small islands and different places around the world and you get them locally, but you never see them in supermarkets. There's only one type of banana, and it's called the Cavendish banana, and it's grown across the world, and it's the same identical thing everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a monoculture. It's basically all the same. It's basically all the same plant, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the point being that if it's all the same plant, it all has the same vulnerability to pests and pathogens, whatever you want to call them. And if a pest or a pathogen was to come along, it could wipe out all of it in probably the space of like a couple of years. And in fact, this actually happened.
It actually happened
in
the previous banana.
Exactly, right. So you've got the Cavendish banana now, which actually replaced the Gros Michel banana, which was the original banana. So banana flavouring, for example, is Gros Michel banana flavouring. That's why it doesn't taste anything like banana, because it's from a different banana that was sweeter and is now dead, because they did the exact same thing. Farmed it across the world, and then suddenly... something broke out in the banana crop and wiped it all out. No more bananas, or that type of banana. And we're doing the exact same thing again with the current banana.
There's a current banana?
You know what I mean. You are literally just here for corny value, aren't you? And obviously this is really dangerous, because this is done with a bunch of other different crops as well. Obviously the danger is that you would get to the point where you have... Everybody relying on something like rice or because rice is like massive, like the amount of rice that's produced, and it's all the same type of rice, is like phenomenal. And if that were all to die off, you can't even imagine what the deaths would be. It's just horrific. Like, it's... I mean, so this is, yeah, this is a really dark episode now, isn't it? I've created a dark episode.
Well, I mean, it does sound like Morgan Freeman needs to be involved.
Right, Morgan Freeman.
You know, we need to find Uncle Ben, that sort of thing.
But yeah, that would probably be the solution. We can ask if Uncle Ben has any ideas.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I suppose there is a historical example of this, and it's Ireland in the 19th century, right? In 1845, the famous Irish famine, when a third of the population either died or left the country because they were too reliant on potatoes.
Yeah.
And guess where the potato came from? The potato actually came from America, was imported, and then was basically sort of sold into Ireland to all the landowners and all the peasants, obviously, of those landowners, to be this cheap, highly efficient source of energy.
Yeah.
But the point is that cheap and highly efficient isn't always the answer, I think, Phil. That's what we're looking at here. If people want to, you know, I think obviously the question that people are going to be asking at this stage is, what can we do about this? It's like, are we all just doomed to be reliant on, you know, vast quantities of corn, vast quantities of, you know, bananas or whatever, and if some one small thing goes wrong with that infrastructure, all of that food is gone, and thousands of people will die. But
say this, and I hope I'm not going to throw some sort of spanner in the works,
no.
But there is a place in Svalbard, which is where all the seeds and plants are kept, right?
Yeah.
And they're continually expanding that, aren't they?
Yeah, in different regions. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
My friend actually went there on holiday, funnily enough. It was a bit weird, but yeah.
Did he actually visit that?
I think so, yeah.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
God, that'd be awful, wouldn't you, if you turned up on those fridges?
Yeah, well, quite, yeah. It's pretty, yeah. I don't know, do they actually have fridges? I mean, unless you cold enough up there already.
I don't know.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's pretty cool, yeah. I mean, but I, you know... So that's one method. But I think the more immediate method that our listeners can take to avoid becoming, you know, to in the words of Gandhi, although no one knows where he actually said it, be the change in society, is to consciously make decisions to seek out rarer and more unusual types of food, to just to try and start chipping away at the massive farm industrial complex, which kind of basically controls all of our eating. Basically, you know, we know it's not good for us because, you know, obesity is through the roof. All other kinds of cardiovascular diseases are through the roof recently. You know, diabetes, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it's always the same. I think the message is always the same. You've got to make the decision to consciously choose something that's higher quality, perhaps more local. And perhaps something a bit different to the average. I don't know what you're going to do about the bananas, Phil. I know you're really upset about that.
Well, I think it's asking people to change their habits.
Yeah.
It's asking people as a collective to change their lifestyle choice.
It
really is. I mean, to be honest, I think it's a bitter impossible. Because there's going to be different dynamics, the different kind of like variants behind why they make that decision.
Yes.
Most of it will be apathy, and a lot of it will just be because that's what they know. People will know what they like, and they will continue to buy those things. For when I go shopping, pretty much 80% of what I buy is the same most weeks.
Yeah.
I'd love to say that I wasn't a creature of habit, in this instance, I totally am. And I think people draw comfort from knowing what it is that they're buying, and asking people to maybe not buy an item because it puts pressure on an agriculture because of maybe intense farming or something, and trying something else is possibly something that may work in the future. But we can't even get climate change sorted, which is, you know, like a huge...
Well, I think it's tricky because... There is I know what you're saying, and I think most people would also, as well as it being convenient, would also choose certain choices based on the fact that they're cheaper. And unfortunately, the sort of industrialised style farming obviously makes things very cheap. But if you are at the level where you have the sort of luxury of making slightly different choices, I think it's not. I don't know how best to describe it, it has to be a sort of individual choice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know how far. I mean, industrial. You know, funnily enough, funnily you should talk about climate change actually, because this is actually quite similar. Quite closely related, because I mean, industrialized farming, like these kind of like mega farms, where they just do like all soy crops, or like all corn, or all of whatever. Like, it's just, first of all, it's horrific for the localized environment, because it's like really bad for all the basically wildlife gets killed off and replaced with this just one thing, which is like either whatever it is, corn, bananas, whatever. But also the machinery and all the amount of technology used to keep that all going. It's very bad for the climate.
Yeah.
And it produces a lot more carbon dioxide actually than most small farms do, which is ironic, considering quite a lot of the climate change activists don't like, for example, cattle farming or whatever.
I was about to say this because I know beef.
Yeah.
Actually, the amount of waste through beef is substantial.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I'd have to look at the statistics, but they were saying that if they're able to stop people from making beef, the carbon footprint would be substantially smaller. There's a lot of different chemicals and materials.
It's from cows farting, basically.
Well, more than that, it's the actual. It's the cows become
the
beef.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So it's the whole process.
The carbon footprint in the actual generation of beef.
Funnily enough, I think for another episode we should focus on that, because I do actually have a counterpoint to this, which is basically beef cattle farming. I'm not talking about chickens or pork or any of that other stuff, but cattle farming on a small scale is actually sort of fairly sustainable in that respect. Funnily enough, people are quite surprised to learn this, and I don't think many people do.
Yeah.
Which is why I think we should save it for a different episode where we can go into more detail.
We could call it "What's Your Beef?"
Yeah, I think that would be the ideal title. So I guess we're sort of I think informing people so that they can make the choice that they want to, and they can say I'm not trying to alarm anyone, but it is interesting to know what the danger could be.
I would also state, though, that I remember a time in my life when I just moved to Edinburgh and I did not have barely any money at all. Mm. Like, my account was pretty much zero.
Yeah.
And I was on a housing estate with other people who had a similar amount of money to me, which was bugger all.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I noticed that everyone on the estate was large, was bigger.
This is exactly what we're talking
was
about.
Was generous, right?
Yeah. Was generous. Really, really healthy.
There was two twins on the estate that reminded me of The Shining. But see, the thing was that they were all bigger people, right? To put no finer point on it. The reason why they were bigger was because they always ate crap food.
Yeah.
And they had crap food because the crap food was the cheapest stuff, you know?
Yeah.
If it was fresh fruit or a big bag of chicken nuggets.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Right? I think it's not necessarily the cheapness. I think it's also the convenience.
Oh, yeah. It is as well.
And that's actually another topic for another episode we should definitely go into. But yeah.
Lovely. But you see, that's the thing, because people that are, I think, healthier generally are people who are richer. Right? Often, the people that are richer can afford to pay for, say, a gym membership.
Yep.
They can afford to look after themselves. They can buy high-quality fruit and vegetables. They can make a routine in their time.
Yeah.
And people that I think a few children and they don't have a highly paid job, they don't have a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah.
Convenience, having food that's just going to get the child fed, is the thing.
It is the number one thing.
And therefore, I do think it's kind of unfair to ask people that don't have much money to try and change their shopping habits, because it may not be possible.
Well, I know what you're saying. I actually think you might have it the wrong way around, actually. The other way around, it should be. So the people are richer because they think about it more. They are healthier because they think about it more.
There is that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that the money makes them able to do it. It's that they've got more money because they've been doing it. Well, they think ahead in all areas of their life.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, I would say that when I was at a stage when I was much poorer,
I was
probably eating much worse food, mm-hmm. you know, and I probably was, you know, slightly bigger than I am now. I don't know, maybe. But I know that if I go around the corner to the greengrocers there, and they have lovely fruit there, big watermelons and all sorts of stuff, it's expensive.
I know what you're saying, It's an interesting, yeah, this is actually, we're going into sort of a, I think we're going on to a different topic, but it's fine. And it's one that is really interesting and I would love to do an episode on. But like, basically, what does healthy food cost? Because there are a bunch of people out there who are very politically active and they want to abolish or ban things like, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, or at least tax it more to make it as expensive as eating healthily, right? I don't think that is the answer, right? Because it doesn't come. Because people have to have a choice. People have to make the choice.
They
I
do.
Feel that people, you know, I personally, you know, it is my own belief that if we are treating people as adults, they must make the choice themselves.
They do.
I know we're sort of being really epic here.
But they know, because people, I think there's been a lot of issues recently where people don't feel like they have their own freedom to make their own choices. That they may think that they do, but they're being manipulated in lots of different areas, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, social media is one.
It's classic. Example, yeah, definitely. Right?
But there's loads of different areas. And so if they... I know for a fact that there was a huge outcry because I think fast food was adverts were banned on children's TV. And therefore people... They're quite upset about that. I mean, I can understand where they're coming from. But you can't... Yeah, you can't really tell people they can't go to McDonald's, Burger King, whatever.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it's kind of on the one hand, it's like being a doctor, right? You can either treat or a doctor that doesn't really know his stuff, right? So back in the day, when you had, you know, the first doctors, and they didn't really know what was going on. So if someone's got a cold, right? They've got a runny nose, if someone's cut themselves and they're bleeding. It's like you might have read something about this, but yeah, back in the day when it was like kind of like, oh, the body is obviously trying to get rid of this blood. Let me put a leech on you and get rid of the blood for you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's kind of like, you know, we're treating the surface symptom and not looking at the underlying problem, which is that people either don't know or they don't, for some reason, have the motivation to do it. And how can we do something about that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm interested in.
So what do you think is the way to help solve this? Is there a way?
There's not a silver bullet. I don't think there's a silver bullet. I do think that I think it would be helpful if politicians stopped subsidising big food companies to produce massive amounts of really unhealthy stuff, which is definitely a thing. And has been since the Second World War, basically. We don't want to go back to Brexit, obviously, but the EU does this to an excessive degree in France and Germany.
What do you mean?
Basically doles out money to farmers to produce loads and loads of stuff, which either doesn't get eaten or is just all the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we discussed the pyramid, you know, the nutrition pyramid, whatever it's called, in the intro episode, and that's a classic example. It's like, you know, so we've doled out all this money to the farmers. The farmers have then lobbied the politicians to make the education system so that people learn that, oh yeah, what we need to be eating is loads and loads of cereal or loads and loads of grain or whatever. And then suddenly everyone's fat. And it's like, well, couldn't see that coming. But it's all because obviously that system keeps it going. And far be it from me to, I don't have a plan to deal with it, but I do think people should be aware of it. Maybe I'll come up with the next episode I'll come up with a solution.
Yeah. But going back to the original point.
Yeah.
So would you say then that there should be some sort of lobbying to try, so for instance, instead of potato,
yeah,
for more people to have sweet potato, which I love, by the way.
That's interesting.
Do you know, like a different variant?
There are some, I think there are variants of potato.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily an issue.
But that's what I mean. I mean, like, yeah. Instead of having...
Well, this is the thing, right? So
say, carrot, it would be,
yeah.
I don't know, something.
The problem that you have is the, you know, for the... It's okay for say, you and I, who would be thinking about it and then go somewhere where you can find something that sells local stuff, which would be different. But if you're, like, as you say, on a council estate, or you've only got one major supermarket in the area or whatever,
yeah.
You don't know where you could find. I mean, to be honest, nowadays it's actually easier than ever to try and find farmers markets and places like this that do sell local stuff, which is kind of like traditionally how it's done anyway. You know, but if you went back to probably 1930 or something, you would, this would be how people got food anyway. But yeah, I mean... it's a tricky one. I other than the things we've already mentioned, I don't know why I'd recommend.
Mm.
So okay. I'm thinking we should probably, I don't know if you agree, but we should end the episode there.
Okay.